Introducing Archivos, a new story development tool that allows writers and gamers to document the story elements of their settings, map the relationship between those elements, and then display those connections through three unique interfaces. One of those displays is the story web. Every story element is presented as an avatar with any related elements orbiting around it. It's a single display that illuminates the complete network of connectivity of your story world. Plus, like all of Archivos' display modes, the story web is searchable and filterable, so you can explore the aspects of your story world that captures your imagination. Learn more about Archivos at www.archivos.digital. That's archivos.digital. Archivos. Your stories illuminated.
This is Cast of Wonders, the young adult fiction podcast featuring stories of the fantastic. Welcome. Episode 262 for August 20th, 2017. We present My Friend Fishfinger by Daisy, age 7, by David Tallerman, originally published in Andromeda Spaceways In-Flight Magazine issue 30 in August of 2007. David Tallerman is the author of the YA fantasy series The Black River Chronicles, which began in late 2016 with Level 1, the Tales of the S.E. Damansko series, and the Tor.com novella Patchwork. His comics work includes an absurdist steampunk graphic novel called Endangered Weapon B and the Rosarium miniseries. David's short stories have appeared in about 80 different markets, including Clark's World, Nightmare, Alfred Hitchcock, Mystery Magazine, and Beneath Ceaseless Skies. A number of his best dark fantasy and horror stories, including this one, were included in his debut collection The Sign in the Moonlight and other stories. We'll put a link to his website and his Twitter account in the show notes for you. And now we've a tale to tell. My Friend Fishfinger by Daisy, age 7, by David Tallerman. Fishfinger is my bestest friend in the whole world. And she says I'm her bestest friend, too, even though she doesn't have any other friends, but I'm still the bestest anyway, so that's okay. Her name isn't really Fishfinger. That's just what everybody at school calls her, because they say she smells like fish, and she looks a bit like a fish as well. And she does, too, but I still like her, and anyway, they all smell, so there. My mommy says it's mean and I should call her proper name, but Fishfinger says she doesn't mind. She does when other kids call it because they're mean and they don't like her, but I'm nice, she says, and I'm her bestest friend, so it's okay. But really, her name is Samantha. Fishfinger hasn't lived in my town very long. Her and her mom and her dad, who I call them Mr. and Mrs. Fishfinger, but that's not really their names, but I can't spell their real names. They used to live in another town near the sea, and that was called Innsmouth. Fishfinger says it was nice there, and no one was mean to her at school because she wasn't different there, and nobody said she smelled like fish. But then they had to move, and she doesn't know why they did. Fishfinger and her mom and dad don't ever come to church with us. So I asked her one time, does that mean that she doesn't believe in the baby Jesus like how we do? And she said, no, they have their own God who's different from ours, and he isn't called God. His name is D-A-G-O-N. That's how she spelled it. And he gives them gold and all sorts of things, she said. And I asked why she doesn't go to a special church so that she can sing and pray and sing songs. And she said they can't because their God lives in the sea. And they had a church at home, only it wasn't called a church, but they can't have one here because there's no sea. I thought that was silly. But my teacher says you shouldn't laugh at people because their religion is different from yours, even when it's silly. Fishfinger's mom seems nice, even though she doesn't say much. But I don't like Fishfinger's dad because he looks at me strange, like how people look when they're hungry. And one time I saw his neck and he had like what my goldfish, his name was Goldie, what my goldfish had for breathing, they are called gills. I thought he had those and I told my mom and she said that was silly because people don't have gills, only fishes do. But every other time he was wearing a big jumper and so I couldn't see his neck and my mom said it was a dream maybe or I made it up, but I didn't, but maybe it was a dream. I have lots of funny dreams lately. One dream I had, there was a big fish man. He was as tall as 10 houses on top of each other, and he wanted to eat me, but then I woke up and it was only a dream. And they can't hurt you, my mom said, but they can still be scary, I said. Anyway, I don't like Fish Fingers Dad much at all. One day he asked me a funny question. He said, "Are you a virgin?" And I said, "I don't know what one of those is except that the Virgin Mary was one." And he said, "Well, if I didn't know, then I was." And Fish Fingers' mom said, "Of course she is. Don't go asking things like that. You'll upset the girl. She's only 8. But I'm not. I'm 7. And he told me he was very sorry and I hoped he wasn't upset. And I said it was okay, but I still don't like him. Only I do like him a little bit because him and Mrs. Fish Fingers said that I can go on vacation with them if I like. They said, "Would I like to come and be a little friend for Samantha?" That's Fish Fingers, her real name, "to play with." And I said, "That would be lovely because my mom and dad aren't going on vacation this year. Last year and the year before that, we went to stay with grandma and grandpa, but we can't this year because grandma is poorly and her legs have gone funny. And so me and Fishfinger are going to go to Innsmouth, which is where she lived before she lived here. And she's going to show me all her favorite places and her old school and all sorts of things. And Mr. Fishfinger says that he will take me to the special place there is, but it's a secret, so I can't tell anybody, but I can write it down. That's okay. It's a big rock in the sea, and they do their religion there. It's like how in our church there's the high up place where the vicar stands, only they have a big rock instead. And that's better, he says, because then their God can come and talk to them properly. He is a very hungry God, Mr. Fishfinger says, and if I am extra especially good, then maybe they'll let me feed him. One time we went to the zoo and I fed the sea lions and they clapped their hands and did a dance. It'll be just like that, except better. I'm looking forward to it lots and lots and lots." So, let's talk about Lovecraft. I'll skip the biography. Chances are that even if you're new to genre fiction, you've heard of Cthulhu, or the Necronomicon, or other aspects of the mythos he helped form. If you're a pseudopod listener, you're well-versed in cosmic horror as a genre. But I'm here to talk about Lovecraft as a textbook example of the problematic fave. Lovecraft was racist. There's no debate about it. He was revolted by and feared women and sea life. His characterizations of American immigrants are one-dimensional, hack-handed, and offensively stereotypical to but scratch the surface. Some defend him as a product of his time. To me, that argument is nonsense. Countless contemporary authors had no problem portraying women and people of color with dignity and respect as complete human beings. The World Fantasy Award was literally founded in his image, until Nnedi Okorafor, Daniel Jose Older, and others campaigned tirelessly for a beautiful new statue. A change which took a notable long time to come into being. Why? My answer depends on the day. Some days I point out genre fiction as an industry has a disproportionately large older population, and that demographic demonstrably favors a conservative approach to change. Other days I can't help but rant and rave about the blindingly obvious institutional racism embedded in resisting the removal of an unsuitable figure for glorification. And by an organization that claims to welcome newcomers, no less. You don't have to search far for chilling parallels. Calls to tear down Confederate monuments in the southern United States spring to mind. And for many of the same arguments each side put forward there. I think it's safe to generalize that Lovecraft's work has been genre-defining. You can draw unbroken lines of influence in film, television, music, and art by a range of creators who both do and don't parallel HP's own bigotry. And now we start to veer into can you hate the artist but love the work territory? There's no universal, objectively accurate answer to that question. How a person approaches art, what they take away from it, and the mark its creator does or does not leave varies infinitely. There is plenty of room around the campfire for every type of story, but no one is guaranteed a rapt audience or a critique-free performance. Part of the artistic bargain is sharing your creativity, and through that act of sharing, opening yourself to the possibility of response. If you love Lovecraft, then great. Luckily for you, there are dozens of stories and decades of content waiting for you. If you don't like Lovecraft, but acknowledge his influence, allow me to make a few recommendations. Drabblecast features an annual Lovecraft Month series of audio short fiction inspired by the wider mythos. She Walks in Shadows by Silvio Moreno Garcia and Paula Stiles is a feminist anthology exploring mothers, heroes, and devourers in Lovecraftian settings. The Laundry Files series of novels by Charlie Strauss explore how the modern British government would contain eldritch horror and prepare its citizenry for the approaching supernatural apocalypse. The Dream Quest of Velvet Bow by Keyes Johnson is a Hugo, Nebula, Campbell, and Locus Award finalist for Best Novella about a professor's quest through the dreamlands when a student goes missing. Splendor and Misery, the Hugo-nominated Afrofuturist concept album by Clipping, follows the sole survivor of a slave uprising on an interstellar cargo ship. Let me read you this from their liner notes. In a reversal of H.P. Lovecraft's concept of cosmic insignificance, the character finds relief in learning that humanity is of no consequence to the vast, uncaring universe. It turns out, pulling the rug out from under anthropocentrism is only horrifying to those who thought they were the center of everything to begin with. Ultimately, the character decides to pilot his ship into the unknown, and possibly into oblivion, instead of continuing onto worlds whose systems of governance and economy have violently oppressed him. Happy reading! Join us next week for...
I have always hated the cold. It makes the simplest of tasks impossible. Trying to tighten the girth around a gelding that was holding his breath on purpose was already difficult with one weak hand and one bad leg. In the cold night, my numb hands simply refused to cooperate, and I was in the midst of heaving, puffing, and cursing the horse's ancestors when Tipsy meowed and alerted me to a visitor.
Cast of Wonders relies on your donations to pay our staff, authors, narrators, and to bring you the best in young adult fiction week after week. If you've enjoyed this story, please consider making a donation. There are lots of ways you can support us. We have PayPal buttons on the site, we're on Patreon, and if something else would work better for you, just let us know. Every one-off, or even better, a reoccurring monthly donation can make a huge difference, and you have, as always, our heartfelt thanks. You can share your appreciation for this story by leaving it and us a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Share the episode with your family and friends, or come discuss it on the EA forum, forum.escapeartists.net. We're at Cast of Wonders on Twitter. Come and say hello. Cast of Wonders is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is brought to you by the creative team of assistant editors Danny Daly and Catherine Inskip. Associate editors Amy Brennan, Alexis Goebel, Andrew Kim, Aiken Patel, Susie Rodriguez, Muddy Schleider, Chris Tang, and Xander Simon. Our audio producer is Jeremy Carter, and I remain, as always, your humble editor and host, Marguerite Kenner. Our episodes are released under the Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 International License. That means you can share the episode, but you can't change it, sell it, or put just the narration from it on YouTube. Our theme, Appeal to Heavens, is by Alexei Nov, available at Promo DJ or his Facebook page, which you can find linked in our show notes. Thanks for listening.